You are listening to the Fandom Podcast. Let your geek flag fly. New episodes Mondays on fandompodcast.com. Today's episode is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.fandompodcast.com/audible. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to the Fandom Podcast, the show that is not about comics, not about movies, and not even about Doctor Who, Supernatural, or Firefly. We are a show about all of that and much more. I am Brandon Ushio, and with me tonight, we have Cortland Caldwell.
It's over 9,000!
And Nathan Caldwell.
Hi.
I can tell that Cortland's been watching a little bit of Dragon Ball Z, and I'm not going to lie, whenever I put on my Google Glass, that's the first quote that comes to my head. So,
I learned about the history of Goku this morning.
Does that mean you watched Dragon Ball Z?
No, I watched the history of Goku on YouTube while I was making breakfast.
Okay.
It's funner if you watch the series.
Well, maybe I'll have to now that I'm done with that stupid Supernatural Season 9 show. I mean, that amazing Supernatural.
10. It's not on Netflix, it's not on Hulu, so I don't know what you're talking about for this whole other season.
Yeah, I gotta wait till it's on Netflix. So I need something until then.
I've been watching it on Hulu.
Well,
but it's only 5 episodes at a time.
Yeah, and I checked my Hulu, but their season 4 is the where I could start. So if you can tell me I don't miss anything between episodes 1, 2, and 3.
You probably don't miss anything between episodes 1, 2, and 3. Yeah. No, it's Supernatural.
Just need to figure out what happens with Dean with the end of season 9.
So one of them lies to the other one, and they get mad about lying, and they can't hunt with each other. And
so you're saying I could watch season 8 again, and it's like watching season 10?
I'm sure glad that Jordan's not on this one right now.
How did we get on Supernatural?
I don't know. So
let you move us into some news.
All right. So our news, it's been a little bit of a slower news week, mostly because all the big news got dumped right for San Diego Comic-Con, and so now we have a little bit of a lull after everyone just did a bunch of big announcements. But Nate, why don't you take us to the first story?
All right, yeah. Before that, small things to mention real quick. Since I wasn't on last week, the reason the Suicide Squad trailer didn't drop right away and we haven't seen an official Deadpool trailer is of copyright issues with music that they use in the trailer. And so that's one of the reasons why those ones didn't drop right after the panel. But we should be seeing the Deadpool official trailer soon.
That's some good information to know. I didn't realize that was the reason why we didn't have the trailers drop right after. So they were still working through licensing rights.
On the Comic-Con front, Salt Lake Comic-Con was granted a trademark from the Trademark and Patents Office for their Salt Lake Comic-Con, which this gives them a huge piece in their battle against San Diego Comic-Con over trademark infringement. But San Diego Comic-Con lawyers, I guess, still are fighting the issue and saying that Salt Lake Comic-Con still infringed on their trademark. And I guess the biggest thing is claiming that people assume that it is associated with San Diego Comic-Con, which is ridiculous. But I could go off on like a whole thing of what's wrong with San Diego and their whole frivolous lawsuit. But so this was a big help, and it's a big thing for Salt Lake Comic-Con. But San Diego Comic-Con lawyers are still being stubborn, and so it has not had the effect on the lawsuit that I think a lot of people thought it would have. So stop me from going on a tangent, Brandon.
Well, no, I think you're exactly right. We have a lot of people who, after Brian Brandenburg announced, hey, we got our patent back from the Patent Trademark Office, and just assumed that meant, oh, this case is over and we've won. And it means that we have a lot stronger case now that we have a trademark, but we do have a but we still have this case, and a judge can still turn over the patent office's trademark based off of confusion. And, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but I have Wikipedia in front of me. So on the infringement and likelihood of confusion test section, they have trademark infringement is measured by the so-called likelihood of confusion test. A new trademark will infringe on an existing one if the new one is so similar to the original that the consumers are likely to confuse the two marks and mistakenly purchase from the wrong company. The likelihood of confusion test turns on several factors, including the strength of the plaintiff's trademark, the degree of similarity between the two marks at issue, similarity of goods and services at issue, evidence of actual confusion, purchaser sophistication, and the quality of the defendant's goods and services, and whether the defendant's attempt to register the trademark was bona fide, which means in good faith. So there are some parts on that where people could confuse it, and some of those factors might apply to us. But let me tell you, if you look at the world in general, yeah, they're going to confuse, oh, San Diego and Salt Lake aren't part of the same organization. But if you look to the people who actually go to conventions, they understand that there are a lot of different convention organizers. And I am so frustrated with all the money that's going into these legal battles. Instead of just creating the best convention that you can to make your event goers have a good time. And we should just be able to do our own conventions. You know what? Yeah, Salt Lake drove down in their Audi. You asked them not to, and they said okay. And then you filed them with this trademark suit. So this trademark is a big chink in the armor of San Diego Comic-Con, but it is not the end-all that everyone was hoping that it was when it was announced. So I think that that's probably enough about trademark. It's not this week in law here, so.
Well, I was just going to jump back in real quick because I have heard people say that they thought Salt Lake and San Diego were the same. Like you said, it's people that aren't in the geek culture stuff, wouldn't go to a Comic-Con unless you gave them a ticket. And so it's people who, like you said, those that go to the cons and go do things like this, they knew that Salt Lake and San Diego weren't associated. But to me, it's almost petty of San Diego, because if this really was the issue, then they would have done it when we announced our first one and not do it right before we're about to have our second one. When, you know, and it's, I've speculated that maybe it's, you know, San Diego thought, you know, hey, we're a new con, it's Salt Lake, it's that they could file this and kind of bully the Salt Lake organizers. And then I don't think they realized that you couldn't, that Dan Farr and Brian Brandenburg, with their other things, that they had the pockets to go into this. And it became more than just San Diego versus Salt Lake. It became San Diego versus everybody else that uses Comic-Con. And there was a lot of other cons who went in with Salt Lake but didn't want to be named in it, so they wouldn't be a target for San Diego. But so, and it's, but like Brandon said, it's for those that go to conventions, they know that they're not associated. Moving on and away from that, because I'd probably go on for the whole show about this lawsuit. So Friday night, I went and saw Pixels, and going into it, it had had a lot of mixed reviews. Like, I'd heard, like, one critic had given it a 0 and said that it's a good thing that Adam Sandler gets paid $50,000 a movie regardless of how it does, because if he got paid based on how well the movie does, he wouldn't make anything on this movie. But then I've also heard a lot of people say that, hey, this is a fun, well-done movie. And it's from podcasts that I listen to that are more the geek side of stuff, are the ones that gave it a good review. So I went into it hopeful. And it's probably the funniest movie that I have seen all summer. Like, it was just good humor. It's, you know, Adam Sandler's kind of moved away from his Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore days, and it's just a good, fun movie, not necessarily a kid's movie. I think kids would kind of be bored with this movie, but for kids that grew up in the 80s and 90s and playing 8-bit video games, you'd have a great time with this movie. And there's just a lot of things that I related to being a geek, and just a lot of fun moments in the movie, a lot of parts that were just ridiculous, but I couldn't stop laughing at how ridiculous it was. So if you want just a fun movie to make you laugh and forget about your cares for 2 hours, go see Pixels. Court, think you'd go see Pixels?
It definitely intrigues me. I've heard some pretty bad things about the movie, though, so I'm a little kind of on the fences about going.
Yeah,
so
it's more grown-ups than grown-ups too.
Well, that's definitely a helpful factor in deciding whether or not I should go see it. Is it worth seeing in the first run movie theaters, or should I wait till the $1.50 movies? Or
I think it's worth taking a night and going and seeing it in theaters now. There's even some people that have gone and seen it saying that, you know, if you grew up playing 8-bit video games or classic video games, then you need to see this movie. And they've even suggested 3D is even a better way to see it, but just not a big fan of 3D, so.
Okay. That'll definitely help me decide whether or not I can go see it this week.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, if you don't like it, if you don't laugh during the movie, I'll pay you back for your ticket.
All right.
I'll just you, Cortland, though. That's not for all fans.
Yeah, you just go and you tell them that you don't like it, and you know, that way you just get a free movie.
Exactly. Wait, am I going to get reimbursed for two tickets? Because I'm not going alone.
I guess. Integrity, though.
Way to work it. All right, why don't you share with us some more video game news?
Well, unfortunately, today, Xbox wasn't working so swell. There was, throughout North America, there's been outages on Xbox Live. It's affected users of the 360, the Xbox One, and then some of the Windows devices with your Xbox Smart Glass. I think that's what the app's called. I don't exactly remember. Anyway, you couldn't connect to Xbox Live. There was issues downloading content, issues performing updates. I personally tried to get on to watch Netflix this morning, and I could not get through to even sign on to my Xbox Live. It would show me that I had friends on, but it wouldn't pull up my background screen. It wouldn't allow me to go to any of my apps. And my sister, she had the same issue with her Xbox. So I thought it was kind of funny because we thought it was the internet being broken today. But good thing Xbox has been working on it. They've posted in on their Twitter and then on their Xbox support website that they're slowly working on it. They have brought up a page with multiple apps and multiple games that were having issues. So those kind of apps and games are back up. I know right now that the Hulu and Netflix are currently working, and then Xbox Live actually fully signed in. So Brandon, I know you have the Xbox One, so why don't you go ahead and tell us about how that affected you today?
Well, so that's one of those things that it's more about living in the age of always-on connectivity, where the internet has basically become a utility. I just closed on the house this weekend, and as I was calling to get all my utilities connected, I called the internet provider before I called the city water. It's one of those utilities that you expect just to always be able to use and always work in this society of ours, which is great because we have this great deluge of information. But then when stuff like this stops working, it drives me nuts because we have this single point of failure for Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime and Sling TV. You know, I told my kids, okay, if you do this, we can. My 6-year-old's favorite TV episode right now is Avatar: The Last Airbender, the 2-hour-long series finale, and that's his favorite one. So I said, if you guys can do this, this, and this, and not have any problems with it, we can go downstairs and I can turn that on and we can watch that. And so I got, and they were great. They did exactly what I told them to. But I was just planning on watching it on Amazon Prime, and so all of a sudden the Xbox Live stops working, and that's what I've got hooked up to my TV for Amazon Prime. And you know, luckily he understood, but I was like, man, if this had been a different situation where if he had gotten an hour less of sleep, I would have been in a lot of trouble. But you know, it just made me realize these consoles are kind of turning into big bricks when you don't have an internet connection. I luckily had Guardians of the Galaxy that I could put in for him, and you know, have a little bit of offline entertainment going on, and he loves Guardians of the Galaxy, so that worked out equally as well. But you know, all of the video games that I have, I couldn't play. There's one of them has a single player mode, but it's just horrible, so I never play that. I heard from people that games that they had downloaded from the store didn't work because it couldn't verify. You couldn't sign into Xbox Live, so it couldn't verify things. It just was horrible. You know, a horrible experience. I can't imagine. You know, Nate, I know a lot of people in the military will like take an Xbox to do like Halo tournaments and stuff like that when they have some downtime. There's no internet connection at a lot of these bases for those, right?
Most bases now have wireless for the barracks and things like that.
Where they will let their Xboxes connect and all that.
Yeah.
Okay. It times have changed in the past 10 years since I've really talked to people about this, but you know, it goes back to that old story that if you're on a submarine, that's not going to work. So, you know, Xbox Live, and then one thing that I did want to specifically talk about this because I saw some people on Twitter just laughing about it, was we have the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One rivalry going on right now. They're like, oh, well, PlayStation Network doesn't go down nearly as much as the Xbox Network, and I looked it up, and it's about the same. The biggest difference is the PlayStation outages are scheduled, and the Xbox ones, they will randomly go down about once a month, and the PlayStation ones, they just say we're down for these 12 hours, which is usually when people aren't trying to use it, but there's you still have about the same amount of downtime on either network. One is just a little bit more planned than the other.
I actually want to jump in for a second on that because Blizzard does that. Every Tuesday is rolling restarts for World of Warcraft. So everybody knows every Tuesday from like 4 a.m. to 8 a.m., when hardly anybody's on, you'll get your rolling restarts. They'll restart each realm for about 15 minutes, fix some bug issues. So I got to give it to PlayStation that they take some time to plan that out, and they take some time to warn everybody that, hey, this is going down. We can't help it. We just need to update everything. So sorry, Brandon, to cut you off. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Oh, no, that's some really good insight, because World of Warcraft and Blizzard and all that stuff, they are very much an online-oriented video game. You can't play it without the internet. So that was some of that news, and we're going to move on now to our first discussion topic, and this is one that has plagued me for quite a while. And so I don't know that I'm here as much to with things to advice, but it's almost like that meme, Michael Jackson meme. I'm here for the comments. I'm here to see what you guys tell me. We're going to talk about spoilers and spoiler etiquette. Any regular listener of the podcast knows I am not good with spoilers. I'll just start talking, and then a lot of times I don't even realize that I dropped the spoiler. Nate and Jordan and Cortland, they're all much better at it than me. So we're just going to spend a few minutes each and talk about this. And Nate, why don't you lead us off on this?
Yeah, so to me, it's, I don't know. There's some like people, you know, like, oh, spoilers, you need to have a warning. But some things, like, after so much time, it should just be understood. Like, if you haven't seen it by now, that's on you. You know, like we've said it a couple times on here, but if anybody ever says to you, wash dies, and you're like, oh my gosh, spoilers, like, it's been 10 years. So if you went 10 years without finding out Wash dies, then kudos on you, but you can't blame somebody for mentioning it and be like, you know, it's not like the movie had just come out and they're dropping that big bomb on you, you know. And that's, you know, some stuff for me, like on Twitter, I like to follow the TV shows I watch, Flash, Arrow, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., all those ones. And it's become a popular thing that the cast members of those shows will live tweet during the episode, and the show's Twitter feed will retweet like people's reactions that they post on Twitter. And so I usually don't watch the show live. I watch it usually the next day on Hulu. But so as I'm scrolling through, if I all of a sudden see a whole bunch of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. retweeted things or like that, then I just scroll through and I don't read them. And then I can't blame anybody for spoiling something for me, because if you're going to go through and you're going to read those things knowing that they could have spoilers, then that's kind of on you. Like, you can't be mad at somebody for spoiling something on social media. And, you know, there are some cases where, like, someone will be, like, in a big, long rant and mention something. You're like, I got tricked. But if it's Twitter and, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was on Tuesday night and there's a whole bunch of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. tweets or retweets, scroll past them if you don't want to be spoiled. But I don't know, maybe sometimes I'm just too reasonable, Brandon.
Well, it's, you know, that's the one thing that drives me nuts about our society right now. It seems like there's no personal responsibility for anything. A few months back, it was about a month after Age of Ultron came out into the theaters, I was involved in like this, I'm not going to call it an argument, because a lot of times I will say things on Facebook just to get a reaction, and I am that guy. I do like to see people's reactions, and I know that sarcasm doesn't always come across. But what happened was somebody posted in the Salt Lake Comic Con's Facebook group, what did you guys think about at the end of Age of Ultron when the Hulk flies off? That's one of those things where I feel like by stating at the end of Age of Ultron should have been enough to say spoiler warning. You don't have to use the word spoiler warnings on social media. And this was like a month after the movie came out. And you had people freaking out in that about this was a spoiler. You should have told us it was a spoiler. I can't believe you posted this here. And I stepped up to defend the poster. I said, they said at the end of Age of Ultron, which in my head should have been a, hey, this is talking about the end of Age of Ultron. Stop reading here if you don't want to continue reading. And, you know, I pretty much said that. I'm like, this should have been your warning. And the biggest guy who was upset about it was like, well, apparently I read faster than you, because by the time that I had already comprehended this sentence, I was already reading the rest of it, and I was thinking to myself, well, maybe you don't read faster, maybe you just comprehend slower. But, you know, that's beside the point. At the end of Age of Ultron, that should be enough to say spoilers. I don't feel like we should have to say spoiler warning on everything. I do like how I have seen a lot of people lately on Facebook use the read more ability. They put like enter dot, enter dot, enter dot. So they put like 5 carriage returns on their comment, and then they put their actual comment underneath that. That way, you know, they can say, hey, this is about this, and then a bunch of lines, and then click read more, and you can see the spoiler. I like that. I want to be considerate to people, but I don't want to have to give up everything that I want to talk about. Because honestly, when I want to talk about something is immediately after I've seen it. And being such a geek, I see things pretty much right away. So I think that there's room for some personal responsibility. And if you decide that you want to be Amish, I'm completely okay with that. This is my analogy here. It's probably a pretty poor one. But if you want to be Amish, I'm okay with that. But don't force me to ride in a horse and buggy just because you aren't able to do these other, ride in an automobile. If you have different priorities, that is great and fine. And everybody's got different priorities. That's part of why we're doing this podcast. This way we can tell you the things that we have seen in fandom, and we've got multiple people here sharing their multiple experiences, and you don't have to be in the middle of everything because you get a little bit of a taste of everything and decide, oh, I do want to go try out Supernatural, or I don't feel like wasting 100, I didn't say wasting, let me change my phrase, I don't feel like watching 11 episodes.
Wasting is a good...
Jordan's going to really have a lot to say about this episode, I can tell. You know, that's mostly my thing about it. I try to be considerate, especially immediately after, you know, a TV series or a movie comes out. I try not to post too many things, but by the time you get down in the weeds of the comments, you're probably pretty free to be spoilery on that one. The one that I wanted to talk about, though, spoilers, and boy, did they break spoiler etiquette. AMC, during one of their mid-season finales, they had a character die. And immediately following the airing of it on the East Coast, they posted this big image with an RIP in the character's name before the West Coast had even gotten to that part of the episode. And I tell you, people lost their minds over that one, about the fact that here's this media company, and they are just spoiling their big ending right there. You know, it's their most commented social media picture that they've put on there, according to People.com article that I read talking about it. I will post a link to it in the show notes, because, you know, in this age of binge watching, I don't want to ruin people's experiences, because I've had such good experiences. But at the same time, like you said, if you've managed to stay away from spoilers for this long, it's more of an accomplishment. It's because you're getting spoilers thrown at you left and right. That's on social media. In person, I think we can be a little bit more sensitive. But then you can also say, "Hey, have you seen this?" My brother-in-law, I just got him watching Firefly, and that was kind of funny. He was like, a week after I recommended it to him, he was like, "It ended at the worst spot possible." And a little later, something came up about his wife was talking about washing something, and I almost made a wash joke, and then I realized he hasn't watched Serenity yet, so can't make that joke. So you can be considerate of people, but part of being considerate about people is not freaking out when people have spoilers, you know, on the other end of things. So those are my feelings about spoilers. Love them or hate them, that's who I am. I get so excited about things, I just talk about things, and I post things. I try to be good. Cortland, how do you feel about spoilers, and what do you think the etiquette should be?
Within our day and age of social media running so rampant that it's hard to look at Facebook or Twitter and not see a spoiler, it's definitely one of those weird situations, because me personally, I don't care about spoilers. If I'm going to watch the show, then I'm going to watch the show, whether or not somebody's already told me the ending or I've read the ending. But I can go through my Facebook or my Twitter or, you know, IGN news, anything like that, and if it has this movie in the title, then I'm probably not going to read that post, because I don't necessarily want to know everything that goes on in the movie. So it's as simple as not reading something that says the Avengers, or not reading something that says rest in peace. So it's a pretty simplistic area there, but I understand people ranting and raving that they don't want this show spoiled for them. They don't want everybody to tell them the ending. They don't. But to me, honestly, it doesn't matter. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to enjoy it. Everybody's told me, I've just from sitting on the podcast, I know 90% of what goes on in Doctor Who, and I'm still going to end up watching it eventually, sooner or later, one of these days, just because it's not a bad show. So I'm still going to enjoy the show, whether or not I've been told everything that happens. Now, when it comes to personal interactions, like with my friends, if there's a show or, you know, a movie that he hasn't seen, I'll ask him if he's watched it, and then I'll tell him some really cool things to look out for, but I'd try my best not to spoil the endings for him. And he's one of those people that he doesn't care if I spoil it, but he's not going to be mad at me if I just flat out tell him every single thing that happens. But it's kind of one of those things that's fun to figure out for yourself. So if you live under a rock and you get to see every ending for yourself and you never get anything spoiled, kudos to you. But if you're like the mass population and you're on social media and you do happen to see a spoiler, well, honestly, just kind of get over it. It's social media. You cannot control anything else that anybody says. You could be, I've been walking through Walmart and somebody will talk about a show and you just so happen to hear that a spoiler while you're walking by somebody, you know, you don't even have to be eavesdropping. People nowadays have very loud voices and they like to show that in Walmart.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Doctor Who, because I did catch up and I went into it knowing the relationship between River and Amy, but it didn't ruin it for me.
But you hated it, right?
No. If anything, I think it made me more excited for when the Doctor realizes, because I knew already, like, to me, it wasn't this big reveal like it was for people who watched when it aired, but I was more excited for the Doctor to finally realize what I've already known.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things. I listen to a couple podcasts that they review movies and books and stuff like that, and a lot of times they'll review a book and go into detail. Oh, they did this, and then they did this, and this is what I thought about this, and all, you know, completely spoiled for me. And I listen not because I love the book or the movie, but because I enjoy the commentary that the hosts have on that. And I've read more than one or two books and watch more than one or two movies because of what was said on the podcast, because I knew what was happening. Just like you were saying, it made me more excited about what was happening than if I had just gone in there cold.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I want to pose this question since we're talking this stuff. How long after something do you no longer have to be like spoiler alert? Court, what do you think? Like, what's the time limit on having to give someone a spoiler warning?
Within this day and age of you can stream it online, I'm not condoning illegally streaming, I'm just saying it's possible. But within this time period where you can watch it same day, day after, you can get it at the $1.50 movies, it's not even going to take a year to come out on DVD. I would say maybe 6 months, if that, depending on how big the spoiler is. Brandon, what do you think about a time frame for spoilers?
That's a tough one. In my head, I hate having to say spoiler warning, but I also, you know, so some spoilers are worth keeping for people because it really will change. Like, you know, there's a movie, and this one was from my childhood, so if you haven't seen it, he's dead already. He's a ghost, and the kid can see dead people. I don't think, like, that one you have to say spoiler alert, but at the same time, and this goes back to what I was saying, in talking to people face-to-face, if they have not seen it, then you need to treat anything, like if you're trying to convince them to see it, you should probably be careful about not spoiling things for them. But if you're on social media, yeah, I think 6 months to maybe a year. I could see pushing it to a year. You know, let that DVD release come out. I know some people who only watch their movies through DVD releases. They don't go to the theaters. They're trying to save money. Whatever their reasoning is, they don't actually go see them in theaters. I get that. So everyone has different priorities. So I can, if I let them have the chance to watch it on DVD, go to Redbox and rent it, get it through Netflix, you know, because they still actually do send out DVDs. I guess it's their other business, but anyway, they still send out DVDs. Give them about a year, and then after that, I say it's fair game. But you know, at the same, yeah. You know, I'm okay with that. If it's a spoiler that's sensitive, maybe. But no, I don't know. I I want, and I will probably just have spoilers slip out without saying spoiler warning for the first 3 months. And then maybe the next 3 months I'll be cautious because I will have gotten chewed out a little bit. So 6 months makes sense to me, but I would be understanding if somebody said, no, you should really wait for a year after that came out to not say spoiler warning. What do you think about those timeframes, Nate? Would you side more with 6 months or a year?
See, to me, I think, like, if it's a TV show, TV series, if the next season has started, then you shouldn't have to say spoilers or, like, because usually if it's going to be on Netflix or something like that, it's on in enough time for you to binge watch and catch up before the next season starts.
That's a really good point. I was, in my head, I was actually thinking more movies, movie related. Yeah.
And to me, movies, I think about a month after it's been in theaters, I think people should be able to talk about it on social media without having to go through all these, you know, if it's Saturday and you want to go on social media and talk about it because it just came out Friday night, then yeah, you need to. But if it's been a month, then people are going to want to talk about it. And then I think it becomes more on the person to try to avoid the spoilers than to expect everybody to use kid gloves around them and expect that nobody's going to want to talk about this movie. Like Avengers, after Age of Ultron had been out for a month, enough people had seen it, they wanted to talk about it on social media. And if you hadn't seen it yet and didn't want to be spoiled, then you need to be a grown-up and take precautions to not be spoiled.
Can I tell you how tired I am of people not being the grown-up? And actually, they are being grown-ups. They are having really wise priorities, maybe wiser than my priorities. They're not spending that money to go to the movie theater, and they're doing things with it for their kids. But I'm tired of people coming, well, I can't see it because I've got 5 kids and I need to do this and I'm working this many hours. You know what? Great. But those are your priorities. And but yeah,
those are the people that have time to play on Facebook and get involved in social media battles with people over whether or not they should have spoiled it or not. But yeah, so to me, I'm like, you know what? If it's a book, you know, like a book series, like a hot, like the 7th Harry Potter book or something like that, then I would say, you know, like maybe 2 months after. That gives you, you know, people have had a chance to go and get it, had a chance to read it. Like, I mean, if you can't say anything about what happened in the 7th Potter book for a year afterwards because you're worried you might spoil it for someone, that's, you know, like you said, though, if you're talking with someone and it's like, hey, have you read the 7th book yet? And they're like, no, then you don't go into about everything with Snape. Like, that's just being a jerk if you know they haven't. But if you're on social media and it's been 2 months since the 7th Harry Potter book came out and you're like, okay, I really want to talk about the twist she did with Snape, and like, you should be able to do that without having to say spoiler. Or
I think, you know, the more I'm thinking about it now, it might also be more about the audience than about whether it's on social media or in real life. Because on my regular social media page, maybe I wouldn't say, hey, I was amazed at this, because I follow a lot of people who would read those books, but not for like a year later. But if I go to the Harry Potter fan page and I'm talking about it, I think that you could even say a month and a half or a month or even half a month after the book comes out, in a Harry Potter fan page, you would be able to talk about those spoilers sooner.
Yeah. Yeah. Settings obviously going to play a big role in it, but like, I think, you know, it just depends on the medium, though, you're talking about. Like, you know, to me, it's like, if we've got to wait a year to talk about how horrible Fantastic Four is, because I'm just preparing myself for, or, you know, if I've got to wait a year to talk about, like, some of the things in Pixels because I'm worried about spoiling someone, to me, that's being a little ridiculous. Like, I should be able to, you know, first part of September, see something about Pixels or post something about Pixels without having people freak out that I spoiled it. Like, at that point, like, if you've seen it, if you haven't seen it, there's probably a reason for it, but you can't expect everybody to hold off on talking about something because you haven't had a chance to see it yet.
What you just said there made me think of something almost completely unrelated, but I want to share it here, and I'll put a link in the show notes if I can find it still. I saw a meme on Facebook for Inside Out, which just made me laugh hilariously. It showed the inside of Batman's head. So you've seen it.
Yes. I laughed.
So in the movie, there's a part where Joy goes to Sadness and says, this is your circle. Do all your work inside the circle. Do not leave this circle. And that's for this little happy, bubbly, you know, 12-year-old girl. But for Batman, Sadness goes to Joy and says, this is the Joy circle. You don't leave this circle. So because it was Batman. Anyway, I will find that and I will put that in the show notes because it was hilarious. And you all need to see that. That's not even a spoiler, but
it's yeah, it's not a spoilerish thing, but it's been over a month. Like, if someone's mad, like, oh, you spoiled the movie for me now. Like, okay, first, you don't even know the context because you haven't seen the movie. Secondly, it's been over a month, so people should be allowed to do memes and stuff like that without people being mad about spoilers.
Yeah, and so that's,
Brandon,
you know, that's...
How could you ruin 10 seconds of a movie?
10 seconds of a non-plot important section of the movie. So,
oh, I could ruin just from 10 seconds of a movie.
Okay, well, do we have any other spoiler and spoiler etiquette related questions?
No, I think just a lot of it just for people like know your audience part of it and try to use your best judgment. But I mean, if someone tells you Walter White dies at the end of Breaking Bad and you get pissed off. It's been over a year. Like, it's been more than long enough. The spoiler etiquette has gone out on that.
Yeah.
But if you say, hey, I haven't seen Breaking Bad, but I want to see it, and then they tell you that, then punch them in the throat.
Our next episode is going to be an Ender's Game book club episode where we talk about Ender's Game. And if you haven't read it, I hope we can do it justice. But, you know, some of the twists in there are very, you could see coming from a mile away, and some of them aren't.
We will be spoiling it, because you can't do a book club without talking completely about the book.
Right, right. You have to, I mean, you have to talk about the twists at the end and stuff like that, because it would be completely pointless not to. And, you know, that came out in 1984. Right now, I want to remind you guys, so next week we're talking about Ender's Game, and... If you have read the book, great, you're on track. If you want a refresher, or you have not read the book, but and you're like, okay, well, it's a week. I don't have time to sit down and read a few hundred pages in a week because I'm busy working and I commute every day. And, you know, obviously you listen to podcasts, so you can spend some time listening to things. I'm going to tell you to go to fandompodcast.com/audible and sign up for a free trial and get the one that I'm going to recommend. It's a slight adaptation, but I really liked it. It was the Ender's Game Alive full cast audio play. That's the complete title about it. And I know Nate's going to be like, it's not source material.
No, it is a great, I love it. But that's when, like, after you've enveloped the whole universe, because it throws in stuff from other things from the universe. It spoils some things, like it spoils kind of the twist at the end. Because it goes into some of the stuff from Ender's Shadow with Bean. And so it's great, but there's also some changes from Ender's Game that they made. And it doesn't go as in-depth. It's not as long of... But if you want something just to give you a general idea of Ender's Game, then go for it. But if you want Ender's Game, then I'd suggest you go with the actual book.
Okay, all right, so if you have read the book and you just want a refresher, Ender's Game Alive. If you have not read the book and you want the actual unabridged book, Ender's Game Special 20th Anniversary Edition. So the Ender's Game 20th Anniversary Edition, the regular price is $31.93. But if you sign up for your free trial at fandompodcast.com/audible, you will get that for a free download. You spend one credit on it, and then the $14 a month... It turns into one credit a month, and pretty much every book on here that I've ever gotten has been one credit. I got one that was 57 hours long, still just one credit. So Ender's Game 20th Anniversary Edition, that is 11 hours and 57 minutes. So if you can do that in a week, awesome. If you are concerned about your amount of time, or you just need a refresher on Ender's Game before you listen to next week's episode, Ender's Game Alive, the full cast audio play, like Nate said, it talks more about the universe and the world. That one is 7 hours and 24 minutes. So, I mean, you're basically looking at about 1 hour a day for the next week to listen to Ender's Game before you listen to our stuff. So, you know, they've got a different actor for every character. Orson Scott Card wrote the screenplay. They have an original score. They have a couple, you know, they have a soundtrack for this. It's not just spoken words. So head over to fandompodcast.com/audible. Sign up for your free trial. Get your free audiobook. If you love it, keep going. I can't recommend this service more. If you decide it's not for you, cancel. The book is yours to keep, and they'll let you come back. You can download it again, time and time again. Audible.com is an Amazon company, and so they've got lots of cloud storage. You're not going to have to worry about them disappearing and going away with all your books in there. So, all right, let's move on from books and spoilers and to something that we're going to have spoilers on, because you can't talk about this without spoilers. Staying in the movie universe, we're going to talk about the best and the worst reboots. It seems like Hollywood nowadays is all about reboots. And I read somewhere that they are guaranteed to make more money that way, and so that's part of why they are more about reboots. But some of them don't turn out quite as well as people had hoped. I'm going to go first with my worst reboot. And my worst reboot is Godzilla from 2014. I tell you, there were a couple scenes that I just got super excited for. And, you know, I was excited because it had, you know, the trailers all showed Bryan Cranston in it, and he just barely played a role. And it's just not quite the same as the older Godzillas, which I watched as a kid. And, you know, like we've talked about so many times before, those things that you've watched as a kid, it's really hard to compare things to them. It can make them just so much better. And, you know, you could say, oh, well, the CG's horrible because, you know, what, there wasn't CG, it was a guy in a rubber suit. Or, you know, the voice dubbing was horrible. And yeah, but it was a product of its time. And that's where we were at. That's, you know, that's one of the good things that this movie does, I feel, is it tries to update it and tries to make it something that people of this generation will find interesting. But I tell you, I sat there. I was at a conference in Las Vegas when I saw this. And, you know, I was just there by myself and I'd blown through all of my, you know, discretionary spending money, and I had my movie pass at the time, so I was like, oh, I'll walk down the strip to go and watch a movie. I ended up sitting there, I'm like, what am I doing here? I could go back to the hotel room and just go to sleep and not miss much. My favorite part was watching the strip get destroyed, and I was like, oh, I think I'm right there. So lots of monsters, lots of fighting. They did keep true at the very end to the Godzilla character, and I was happy about that, but... You know, it just left and right, I was like, why did they make this change? Why did they make that change? Didn't seem to be good. They tried to make it more relevant. It just was a long and boring movie. Kind of like that synopsis of it. So, Cortland, what is your worst reboot?
Well, I'm not going to go away from the movie world for my worst reboot, but I will be giving some honorable mentions to worst reboot inside the video game world. So, yes, I do have to break away from the movie world a little bit. But my worst reboot was Dragon Ball Evolution, which was a live-action film based off of Dragon Ball Z. And this movie was absolutely terrible.
It was pretty bad.
That's definitely an understatement. But so the acting choice was not the worst part. It was what they did to some of the classic Dragon Ball characters that really kind of, yeah, I don't, there's not much I can say good about this one. And it kind of depressed me because James Marsters plays Piccolo, which in my opinion, Piccolo was the worst depiction that they could have possibly done ever. But James Marsters is one of my favorite actors. He's just an incredible actor. And they put him in this role where, you know, Piccolo is supposed to be this great fighter from Namek and he's supposed to be pure evil, which it shows that, but it doesn't really give you his backstory with how he broke away from Nami and, you know, how Nami, it tells you about a Council of Seven creating the Dragon Balls, which never actually happens in the Dragon Ball universe. It's on Namek, the elders created the seven Dragon Balls, but on Earth, Nami created his own set of seven Dragon Balls, but they could only grant you one wish rather than three like you can on Namek. And there's just some things that really bug me about it because Bulma, you know, supposed to have all blue hair and she only has one little blue streak. And definitely, like I said, Piccolo is the worst depiction I've ever seen. But then they have Gohan in there and Gohan doesn't play any part of the story at all until Dragon Ball Z. But by that point, Piccolo's a good guy. He actually helps everybody because he takes Gohan under his wing and trains him to fight. So now they've got Gohan in here for absolutely no purpose whatsoever. So just this adaptation, for one, I don't think Dragon Ball should have ever been a live action film. It's an anime series. Live action anime just doesn't work all too swell. So that's why you don't see like a live action Yu-Gi-Oh! And live action Pokemon.
Aren't we going to see a live action Yu-Gi-Oh?
No, it's just a completely different story based off of the Pharaoh and Seto.
And they have an Attack on Titan enough coming out that looks like it will be really good and possibly better than the anime.
Those
we just gotta contradict
things,
you.
Yeah, I don't know. Those giant things actually being human scare me a little more than they did in the anime series.
Right? Right? They look kind of freaky.
But so, I mean, even that, you know, Attack on Titan may be good. It doesn't look horrible, but then again, they have movies like Dragon Ball Evolution to say, hey, this is what they did wrong. Let's not do that. Because this actually on IMDb has a 2.8 out of 10, which is obviously a horrible score. And there's, you know, 506, there's well over 500 reviews, and they've only got a 2.8 rating. So it just goes to show that this movie definitely earns the number one spot of worst reboot for me. Nate, how about you?
Okay, so I'm sure you guys think you know what I'm going to say, but...
Bad Boys 2.
That was a sequel, not a reboot.
Oh.
But... No, when I looked through this, I decided for fairness in my criteria of deciding these, I'm taking comic book movies out of the mix. Because so no Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, no Fantastic Four, and some of you are like, you haven't even seen the reboot yet, which most people don't realize there was a 1990s Fantastic Four movie with Mole Man as the bad guy. Captain America.
When Captain America throws his mighty shield.
That was a cartoon series.
Oh.
There's actually been a couple of different movies before the first Avenger. Batman, there's been a number of Batman movies. If you count the 1966 made-for-TV movie. And
some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Tim Burton run, the Batman Dark Knight run, and now we're getting rebooted with the DC Cinematic Universe, the D-squared U. the Superman, there's been three different Superman series I can think of off the top of my head. Spider-Man's going to have its second reboot in 15 years. So I took those out of the mix because, just for fairness, because of how passionate I am about some of these.
That way you got to tell us about all of them without actually naming one of them as the worst.
I just got to mention some of them. So when I look through the list of other ones, there's only four that I've seen, the original and the remake. And so my worst reboot, I'm going to have to go with Friday the 13th. And it wasn't so much that it was a bad reboot, but it was just like, it's like you're taking something that became like a classic cult horror series. And they tried to do that with a lot of them. And I think Hollywood's just out of ideas, but it really didn't do anything for me. Like, it didn't add to the lore of the Friday the 13th, or like I saw it and I was like, all this technology, all the storytelling abilities, and that's what she gave me. So that's my worst reboot. So, Court, you want to give us your honorable mentions?
Yes. So I got to agree with you on a pretty bad reboot there, though, Nate, because the original Friday the 13th was released back in the 80s, early 80s, and it was definitely a shock for that time. It was a whole different movie. And then the new one comes out, and it was a lot of boobs and a lot of death, and it was nothing special.
I thought that's what horror was.
I don't even remember the boobs. That's how bad it was.
But some of mine that I want to give a mention to was, I had a tough time choosing with the video games on which one would be the worst between Conker Live and Reloaded, which is a reboot of the Conker's Bad Fur Day from the Nintendo 64. And I absolutely loved Conker's Bad Fur Day, and I'd rather commit harakiri than play Conker Live and Reloaded again. And then the Sonic the Hedgehog, the reboot in 2006, was probably one of the worst reboots in video game history. And then Duke Nukem Forever, we wait 10 plus years for a new Duke Nukem game, and they just kind of gave us a pile of garbage and said, here you go.
We know you'll pay money for this.
Didn't they remake Wolfenstein?
Yeah, they did that one too.
They've done quite a few, actually, stemmed off of the remake. And for Wolfenstein, it actually wasn't too bad of a game. It was a lot different from what I remember on the computer, but it was actually not a horrible game. There was great gameplay. The fighting mechanics were a little skee-wampus, but other than that, and it had a pretty good storyline to it. And then one for horror is Nightmare on Elm Street. The original one was released right around the same time as Friday the 13th, and the reboot was just a disgrace to the entire Nightmare on Elm Street series, because nobody can depict Freddy the same way that Robert Englund has. So the new guy they got looked just like a burn victim and not a demon. And he tried to make one joke, because that's, Freddy's charisma. He makes horribly cheesy jokes, but it definitely adds an awesome aspect to the show. But he tries to make one joke, and it completely flopped. And then the ending of the movie was ruined. They botched his storyline. It was just terrible. So, Brandon, do you have any honorable mentions for worst reboots?
Oh, There are a lot of honorable mentions, but, you know, I think that I am going to, I think that I'm going to abstain from having them tonight, because I could go on for a while. So mine mainly fall into, like, the TV shows that were TV shows when I was a kid, and they remade them, and so I'm sitting here, like, I'll watch my son watching TV and just kind of cry, so. Anyway.
I do have to say that Shining Force, one of my favorite games from the Sega system, PlayStation tried to do a remake of, and I was so excited for, and played it for about an hour and turned it off and cried.
That's pretty much how most games go, to be honest. There's not a whole lot that really reboot the series well, but my best reboot does come from the video game world, and it's got to be Fallout 3. The original company who did Fallout 1 and 2, they had a great game, they had a great concept on their hands, but the company went bankrupt. So Bethesda bought out the rights to Fallout, and they remade Fallout. They made Fallout 3, which is a sequel, but also an entire reboot to the series. And this one, I've logged probably as many hours in Fallout 3 as I have in World of Warcraft. And I've been playing World of Warcraft since I was like 13. I've only been playing Fallout 3 for the past 3 or 4 years. So that definitely tells you that in that span of time, there's so much to do in Fallout that it gave them a whole new generation. And they did move it from computer because Fallout 1 and 2 were only on the computer. So they did move it to Xbox 360 and PS3, which of course that'll give you a better graphics and better game engines and things like that. But that's not the only thing that made this one of the best reboots ever. They kept in storyline, you know, they kept in the Brotherhood of Steel, they kept all these different kind of stories that actually happened in the first two games, and now in the third one you get a more detailed look at these different factions. And they didn't change it too much. They still have your Pip-Boy in there, but they made it kind of an upgraded version of the Pip-Boy, so it's more interactive, there's more things to do on it. And Bethesda was actually really good because they took some of the ideas. The original company that owned Fallout actually had plans for a third iteration before they went under. So Bethesda actually took some of those ideas that they had and put it not into Fallout 3, but into New Vegas. So while, you know, it was their sequel to their sequel reboot combination, I still for actually taking some of those old ideas and implementing them into a new age game and still giving that company the homage that they deserved with those. They had some great ideas. So that's enough for my rant about Fallout, and I'll give a couple honorable mentions to some of the best ones. But Nate, why don't you take over?
Yeah, so it's of the three left on my list, it really wasn't even a contest. And I mean, this is, you know, there's one on here remake that I love as a movie, but it doesn't compare to Ocean's 11. Brandon's all mad at me now.
Ah!
But, and I actually, so I saw Ocean's 12 before I saw the remake of Ocean's 11, and Ocean's 12 was like, and my friend was like, okay, that was, like, we went and saw it in theaters, because he's like, Ocean's 11's so great. And so then he felt so bad that he talked me into seeing Ocean's 12. We watched Ocean's 11, and I was like, okay, yeah, this is good. And then on when I was in college, the original Ocean's 11 was on one of the subscribe movie channels, like HBO or one of those. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch this and see, you know, compare it, see the first one for the time that it was filmed. It was a freaking good movie. And it sets the bar high for the remake. But the remake is on par and just hits on so many levels with it, with keeping with the spirit of the movie. Like, technology advanced so much for, like, casinos and their security stuff that they had to change the story a bit, but they kept with the spirit of the story. They kept with the relationship you had between these 11 people. And I mean, for, you're talking like the Rat Pack in the original Ocean's 11, and I mean, those were the guys back then in Hollywood. And the remake, you get George Clooney and Brad Pitt playing the two main parts, and you really couldn't get any two guys that were more Rat Pack-ish in this day and age than those two. And I just, it's, I mean, like I said, it wasn't even close, and my only other contender was Red Dawn. And I just, I love Red Dawn for a lot of other reasons, but as far as a remake goes, it's nowhere even close to what Ocean's 11 did. So now that I stole your thunder, Brandon.
I was so excited about that one. That is okay. I've got another one to talk about, but that's my favorite reboot that Nate just had right there. I mean, you got Frank Sinatra as Danny Ocean, and one thing that I really liked about that, about the original versus the reboot and how the reboot handled it, because I did see the reboot first, because product of my generation, but the fact that, and okay, so this is 40, 50 years, we talked about it, we don't have to say spoiler warning, but I'm giving you a heads up here. The endings are completely different. In the old one, there is a twist, and not, yeah, it, so they updated it, because back in the day, you couldn't have the bad guys win. I mean, to some extent, they do, but it's not quite like Ocean's 11, the reboot is, and I loved the reboot. So, without going any more onto that one, I was all excited all day to talk about it, too. without going any more into that one, my next one is The Italian Job. I loved this movie. You know it. So The Italian Job came out in 2003, or the one that I saw first. Okay, so The Italian Job, the reboot, came out in 2003, starred Mark Wahlberg, Charlize Theron, Edward Norton, and the original one came out in 1969, and... It starred Michael Caine and Noelle Coward and Benny Hill. You know, it had some fairly big names, but I liked how the Italian Job. I'm still stuck on Ocean's 11. Dang you, Nate! How the Italian Job, it had this big heist, and then it had a story behind it, and then it had another big heist. And, you know, the first big heist alluded a little bit to the Italian Job, but what really alluded to it was the last heist. And I loved how they paid so much good homage to the original movie. You know, they had the minis in there, they had the traffic jam. Like Nate said, there was so much difference in technology between these two films that they did a good job keeping the spirit of the movie and... yet being able to change things. Like, the original did not have Seth Green's character as a hacker. I'm just, you know, it just didn't happen. You know, it's a fun movie. A lot of the effects were practical. You know, your minis driving down the subway. Back in the day, a lot of those movies, they would have tried to make it more of a CG thing, and then that would have stuck out completely. And so, like, the only way that you would have had these minis driving down these flights of stairs would be to have the minis driving down the flights of stairs. That was the best way that they had that. They are both a lot of fun films. I could have an all-day marathon where I watch the original Ocean's 11, then the new Ocean's 11, and the original Italian Job, and the new Italian Job. Fun movies. Lots of fun. So that's my second favorite reboot. Nate had my first favorite reboot. Cortland, do you have some honorable mentions for us?
Yeah, it's in at the end, because nobody needs to listen to me talking for long periods of time. But some from the video game world are, and they were definitely hard competitors with Fallout 3, but the one that was most recently released for was on 360, and gave a whole new storyline to Lara Croft, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. I just wish that it was a little... Mortal Kombat 9 was one of the most amazing reboots to the series I've seen. I wish 10 was a competitor with it, but that's all right. We won't talk about that right now. And then one, the original and the new one, or the remake, they both bring me to tears a little bit, is Brian's Song, which is based off of the Chicago Bears football player who had cancer. They both keep in within the story arc of how he was having a hard time, but he still played, and he was still the best he could be, and he never lost his sense of humor. So both of the movies give you a character that you can relate to. You'd start to love him for the 2 hours of the movie, and then he dies, and you really actually want to cry a little bit.
Spoiler alert.
Then... Oh, it's been years. I don't know how many years, but lots of years. And then a couple more is Carrie, which was originally done in 1976. And the first one was amazing for its time. Then it was redone in 2002. And the reboot, I felt, was very under par with the original. And then it was rebooted again in 2013. And the 2013 one was amazing for special effects and for a lot of different reasons, and it definitely kept with the storyline of Carrie. The only problem I have with that is the actress who plays Carrie is a little too confident in herself, And she definitely shows that, whereas Carrie is supposed to be a very shy person who doesn't really understand her world. So it's interesting to see the progression between these three movies, not only in technology, but to see how it can go up and up and up and then plummet and start to bring it up a little bit more. But that's my rant for honorable mentions.
Okay, Nate, did you have any mentions that you wanted to do for...
I mentioned it while I was Red Dawn. And I know it made a lot of people mad, but I thought it was a really well-done movie.
Okay, I haven't seen that one, and I don't really have a lot of honorable mentions. I kind of fell into my honorable mention because of Nate. Thanks.
Welcome.
But real quick, I just wanted to ask, you know, we've seen a lot of reboots, and remakes. Some of them are for licensing reasons, and some of them are just because they think they could retell this story now. I just want to ask you guys real quick, what's your gut feeling? Why do you think that Hollywood and these game companies are, instead of investing in new property, do these reboots? Nate, what do you think about that?
I think it's just hard to sell an original idea and get Paramount or Fox or some of these production companies to give you big money for an original idea. But when you come and say, hey, what about, you know, remaking this one? Or I think they want to go with what they think is going to be the safer route and give them their return on investment. And something they see as a completely original idea that they're not sure how it's going to play out, I think they're more scared of.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that quite a bit. All comes down to money. Cortland, what do you think?
I think when it comes down to certain things like our worst reboots, it had to come down to money. It was they think this is going to sell. But some of the best reboots, I think it's because they actually could retell the story and they thought it would do well. And with some of our best reboots, obviously they showed that yes, money was a factor and that they could make money off it, but they showed that they could tell the story well enough or they could continue that series well enough that people would actually want to watch it.
You know, that makes a lot of sense. You know, I'm looking at the movie section of our best reboots and they came out, you know, a good 40-ish years before they finally did a reboot on that. And those ones tend to be a little better because they're not held as to quite as high of a standard by as many people because, you know, my generation, we had no idea what, you know, the Italian Job or the original Ocean's 11 was like. And we were able to go see a fairly original movie that paid quite a bit of homage to their predecessors. Whereas you look at movies like Friday the 13th, that film was not out of people's brains yet, basically. Jordan talked a little bit about how people didn't necessarily know what Tron was, but let me tell you, I knew what Tron was, and I, you know, that reboot / continuation sequel that they did, I wasn't too thrilled with it just because there were lots of things about the original Tron that completely changed the spirit on. If you have something stuck in your head, I think it's hard to reboot. But then you look at like Spider-Man with all of his reboots, and that's completely a licensing thing. You know, Sony wanted to hang on to the Spider-Man property licensing to use it in film, and so they rebooted it. And then, you know, Marvel wanted to use it in the MCU, and so they're rebooting him again. Fantastic Four, the only reason they're doing another Fantastic Four is to hold on to those rights. I mean, it's all about holding on to the rights and contracts on that. It's not about let's make a good movie. So, you know, I think that's a good way to look at that. You know, you can tell when something's all about the money and when something is all about the, hey, I've got a good story to tell here. Because really, that's what all this mass media is. It's just good stories. And some bad stories, too, like we've talked about tonight. Thanks for listening to the Fandom Podcast. Reminder, next week is our Ender's Game Book Club, which head over to fandompodcast.com/audible, sign up for your free trial, get the book. This is one of my favorite books of all time. Ready Player One, I've just recently found and liked, but Ender's Game, since I've been a kid, I have loved this book. I was 12 years old the first time I read it, maybe 11. Go get it, read it, so that you can be part of our conversation. Fandompodcast.com/audible. Get your free copy. Be sure to like us on Facebook, facebook.com/fandompodcast. Follow us on Twitter, @fandomcast, and head over to our website. All right, if you want to follow each of us, Nate is on Facebook, facebook.com/NathanFandom. Cortland is Corthan94, or on Battle.net, thy wraith number 1429, and I am Overgrown Asian on Twitter.